Christine is used to the educator's style of all of these things and involving the audience, and she seems to think that the first thing we can do, wake the class up and let them vote on who has to get off the panel.
No.
Okay. We are handicapped with only two mics, so we're going to be passing these back and forth. I'm sorry, guys. Gals. So
some of us may not need a mic.
Disappointing.
It's a really talented crew. I have promised at least one person's family that they would return alive. So we like no murders to take place here, no lynchings. And frankly, there's no one here, I think, who deserves any form of lynching, but certain praise. Let me quickly introduce our guests for this discussion. And I got a quote, and then I'm going to let the people talk. On the far right, with the dulcet tones, is Gail Simone. Our ambassador from a old world ethos of how they might have handled it, as well as his work in this new world, Mr. Dave Gibbons. Representing the, I'm too new to know why the hell you're asking me to be on this, or how big this is going to be, Marguerite Bennett. On my immediate left, we have Adam Hughes.
Yes.
On Adam's left, we have Christina Blanche. The far left, representing the, you guys all take this way too seriously, Tom Zoller of Love and Capes. And I'm Paul Evans. So Milo Manara aside, the whole issue of the depiction of people as sexy or sexualized, exploited or artistic, is an old argument in comics. And one of the challenges for people talking about it is we perhaps don't have a clear language to describe where those lines are drawn. It's kind of a Potter Stewart, I know it when I see it, but that's very individual. Great quote I found online from Amy Reeder, one of our wonderfully talented artists in the business. It's not an easy thing to evaluate or explain what is okay and what's not. Some sexy drawings of women I can get behind, some I can't. Some of that's context. But a lot of it is what seems like a weird intuition that I couldn't really pinpoint until recently. The word that changes everything for me is personhood. Does this woman seem like a person? Do they have life breathed into them, a personality? Or are they an object? Do they feel manufactured or repetitive? I'd like to hear the points of view of everybody on the panel, and also ultimately to hear from a fair number of people in the audience if time permits. And just let's talk about this and see if we can improve the quality of the conversation beyond this piece of art sucks, and, which sometimes is the answer, but doesn't really help enormously preventing the next piece of art from sucking. The more we can come up with an aesthetic answer, an abstract answer to these things, statements like Amy's, statements like I'm hoping to hear from some of the folks here, I think the faster it is to make progress on this. Even though you don't need a mic, you can have one anyway. Assuming it stretches, or maybe we just invite you to move further.
hilarious. Can you guys hear me without the mic?
Yes.
Okay, I don't know if y'all have heard that Secret Six is coming out again. Thank you. And so recently I said online something to the effect of, this is the book that Wortham, that has everything in it that Wortham did not want to see in a comic. So I have a pretty wide scope of what I think is sexy and appropriate and not appropriate and belongs in a comic or doesn't. And for me, I really do agree with what Amy said about personhood and context. And I like cheesecake art, and I think to lump, particularly if we talk about female creators, female readers, females in the industry, commentators, into one lump, saying that they all have the same sensibility. You just go on Tumblr and take a look for 10 minutes, and you will see that just is not true. So I think to, draw lines of what's appropriate and not appropriate is very difficult, because those lines change from week to week, month to month, sometimes day to day, on what people are going to be accept in terms of sexuality. But for me, it's about, is this a story? Like, I hear people comment sometimes about Ed Benes art, or sometimes Adam Hughes covers, which I think they do some of the most gorgeous covers in the industry. And the reason that they are gorgeous is not just do they have beautiful female characters, but there's a story on that cover. They very much have something to say, not just, oh, look at this boob that's two times the size of anyone in existence's head. That's not what it is. Although, if it's power glore, maybe it is. it's just about, does it suit the character? Is this telling a story? Does this have a reason to exist? Or are we just creating something that's dishonest? It's only for like a super tiny percentage of the audience. But to me, that's what it's about.
Okay.
Well, can you hear me okay without the microphone? Because when you speak through this microphone, it gives you a really strange echoey effect as well. So I'll just raise my voice a little bit. I really don't know why I'm on this panel. In fact, at first I thought it was my spotlight panel, Dave Dimmock, sexy, well, sexualized.
Really? Well, we can switch it to that right now.
Yeah, let's make it about that. But it's kind of weird growing up in England, because we had boys' comics and we had girls' comics. And in the boys' comics, there were no women. There might be an occasional eccentric aunt or kindly mother, but there were no girls in our adventures. And in the girls' comics, it was all about schoolgirls, adolescent gangs of girls discovering smugglers in the secret cave, all this kind of thing. So, I grew up drawing stories that just featured whoever was in them. When I came to finally have stories that had women or girls in them, if there's a distinction, I think perhaps there is, I would just draw them as like more characters. And I would never instinctively see them in terms of their primary physical sexual characteristics. And I've always actually envied people like Adam who can draw, quote, sexy women, because I don't consider it to be a forte of mine. I actually think I just draw characters who have various attributes. And I've never actually, as far as I know, other than I think I did one issue of Legion of Superheroes when Paul was writing it, it was the only time I was aware of the bosom. Not due to Paul's writing, but due to the costume that the character was reading. And when I think about the characters, female characters I've drawn, the most famous one, I think, is Martha Washington, who I love her as a person. I don't love her as a sexy... She is a kind of a sexy woman, but she just gets on and gets things done, and she's just got, to me, human attributes. In Watchmen, which is the other thing I'm well known for, there was a bit of cheesecake going on, but it was deliberately cheesecake, because it was about old comics that had a lot of cheesecake in them. So I don't know if those observations are relevant to what we're talking about, but to me, frankly, personally, it's always been kind of a non-issue.
Okay. Marguerite, you're the freshest in terms of crossing the line from being a reader, seeing this all and reacting to it as a young woman, to being involved in the making of all of this mess. Can you talk with both of those voices for a moment?
Carefully.
And with the microphone.
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, I guess I'm going to start out by echoing both Gail and Dave's sentiments, where a lot of it for me comes down to the idea of personhood and power. So, you know, when an artist or even a writer, you know, requested an artist to depict a character in a certain way, you honestly have to get into the head of the character. Would this be something where it's authentic to that personality that they would present themselves in a sexual way, or would it be presenting themselves as powerful, or presenting themselves as vulnerable, or inviting a gaze, or deflecting a gaze? And, you know, you could make the argument that, you know, when you create a sexy superheroine, you could say, you know, well, that's just her personality. You know, she wants people to look at her. You know, she wants, you know, to be provocative, or it makes her feel good about herself. And, you know, it's about her and her identity, as opposed to her interactions with the world around her. But then you sort of get into the territory, well, wow, it's really coincidental that we have like 90% of them are like this. So it's a matter of, in a lot of ways, for me at least, getting an authentic voice for those characters. You know, so it doesn't just become, you know, it's so peculiar that like almost all of them feel this way. So, you know, to write women of different personalities and different temperaments, but to always make it, you know, feel honest and real, like this is a real person. So that would, I guess, be, like, that's the thing that I try and concern myself with the most as far as designs for characters and designs for costumes. Since we brought up Tumblr, there's actually a photo series that's been going around recently showing traditional Greek and Roman statues, just exquisite marble sculptures that someone has photoshopped an iPhone into. So, you know, it could be nymphs or something naked to the waist. And so it starts out as, you know, something beautiful and traditional and classical, the kind of thing that you would learn about while you were in school. But these are sculptures that were made, you know, for, like, for a male audience, presumably, you know, to take pleasure in viewing the female form. And then, but as soon as you add the addition of the iPhone, it becomes an indictment of vanity. Like, how dare she find herself beautiful? And so it was really interesting to me, and I'd really never thought about it in that capacity, where it was okay if she was looking good for someone else, but it was negative if she was looking good for her own self and for her own self-esteem. And so just being able to find that core of identity within the character is honestly the place where it becomes the dividing line for me between the sexy and the sexualized.
Adam?
Yes.
Be not afraid. I see no pitchforks. I see no nooses. I suspect there are as many people in this room who have adored the covers you've done as there is any other point of view. How do you figure out how to portray a woman in a fashion that fulfills the goals that we've talked about, assuming you buy into those goals, and yet make them appealing on a cover?
I have to say that I don't intellectualize it that much. I actually go on instinct. I go on what do I like to see? What? Oh, it sounds like Lou Gehrig up
here. Ice bucket.
This is really cool, actually. You know, years ago, early in my career, I did a bit of work for Penthouse Comics, and I was terrified when I did it. I personally felt like I was crossing a line that after that, DC or Marvel or anybody would never hire me again. And ever since I worked on Penthouse Comics, quote the great Linda Carter and say, I was young, I needed the money. But ever since working on Penthouse Comics, my barometer has been broken. I've had numerous editors and art directors go, maybe dial that down a little bit. And it's humorous, but it's true. I've sort of lost the ability to go, oh, this is tasteful. Or this is not tasteful, and I require the the vision of people around me, people who I work with, like perhaps Gail, to say, oh, this is good or that's not good. Gail and I did a Rose and Thorn cover that was a little contentious at one point because it had Thorn licking Rose's landlord. And
Well, she had a comma in her hand to his throat, too.
Yeah, nobody noticed the extremely sharp implement in their hand. They just oh my, wow, you have a character licking another character on a major cover. And, you know, there was debate back and forth over whether or not this would be the right thing to do, and I thought it was funny. You know, other people were like, this is crossing a line, you've gone a little too far. And
except for when I said, well, if the sexual roles were reversed, would we be having this discussion? Mm-hmm. And then they put it through.
Yeah, and so I'm just saying all this to go, I don't know what I'm doing. I agree with Dave, it's sort of like just, you know, the aspect of coming up with some sort of personal agenda with which your artwork or your writing, you know, whether it fulfills it or not, is new to me. I've always just run on, you know, well, does this look good? Does this look entertaining? Does this tell a story? And it's very unusual because, you know, I'm of a certain age where things that were commonplace when I was a child, things that were like, you know, language, social mores, you know, that were baked into me as a child have, in the last couple of years, become taboo. And all of a sudden, I have to watch what I say and what I do because things that the society that raised me said, nope, this is how we talk, this is how we do things. Now, all of a sudden, it's like, you got to really, no, you can't refer to a group of people by that name, or you can't say this word, or you can't, you can't use the word friend zone or something. You know, it's just you get. And I'm going, wait a minute. That these are things that first time I heard them, they weren't crass or uncool. So now I actually do a lot more overthinking of when I'm approaching a project. Going, okay, this isn't just about me. This is about how it'll be perceived by other people. Hmm. How might this be interpreted, or more importantly, how could this possibly be misinterpreted? And it's just, oh, there's a question. Should I stop, or I'll stop?
Can I, like, welcome you to being a woman?
You're both a working practitioner in the field, and you're the real academic on this. I'm only a faux academic.
You're a brilliant academic. I come at this from a lot of different angles, and I think a lot of people.
Hey.
I told you she was the real actor.
You feel illuminated.
First, let me say I'm a huge fan of your work. Huge. Love it. I come at it from an educational angle. I come at it from a fan of comics. I come at it as a female. I come at it from the store, all three of comics. I'm also writing a comic. So there's a lot of different parts of me. I had a little bit different upbringing than a lot of people, is that my mom and dad never really told me I was a girl. Mm-hmm. I just kind of figured it out, and if people told me I couldn't do, like, I wasn't supposed to be Han Solo because I was a girl, so I just beat all the boys in the neighborhood up.
Cool,
like,
yes!
Now it's Han Solo. And it was nothing against Princess Leia, but I mean, who wouldn't want Han Solo? He's cool, you know? So, and I had so I come at it from a lot of different angles, but there are things that are sexualized, there are things that are sexy, but the problem is it's not just in comics, it's everywhere, because nobody can really define, you know, nobody in here, I will guarantee you, has the same definition of sexy and sexualized, and that's just this room. So if you take that and you amplify it to all of these different cultures and all of these different upbringings, nobody is going to have the same thing. I have much different reactions to certain covers that other people do. I was one of the few people that I knew that I had no problem with the Powerpuff Girls cover that came out. I had people screaming at me about it. I didn't see anything wrong with it. Just because, here's the big thing, just because we're looking at clouds and trying to see what they look like, and I see a horse and somebody else sees a penis, that's not on me. So when I look at like Adam's work and I was like, oh my gosh, that's beautiful, other people go, oh my gosh, well, she just wants this or that. Look at a Hardee's commercial, okay? And you tell me that this isn't, you know, a worldwide thing. So I think the biggest problem is just everybody is different and everybody sees things differently and they take different things away because of their experiences. And it is one of those things when I'm writing, and I can probably get away with a lot more writing than a man sometimes, because it's like nobody will question this because, you know, of my female perspective, which, you know, it goes both ways. So I'm just rambling now. He's got an answer already. I think I stole it. Darn it.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
I thought I was on this panel because of My Little Pony. Because it's a bunch of naked characters having adventures. None of them.
It's an interesting
experience. You didn't have that one ready?
No, I didn't have it ready.
No, for me, because I agree with so much of what everybody said on the panel, so I don't want to repeat. For me, a lot of any lines that I draw metaphorically are based on the audience that the book is aimed for. Because comics aren't a genre, they're a medium. The same way that TV and movies aren't a genre, they're not all westerns, they're a medium. So the part where I start to glitch is where when characters are portrayed a certain way and then they're also sold on Underoos and on lunchboxes. And that's where I have the cognitive dissonance, where I'm okay with there being levels of characters, but I think there needs to be lines of demarcation between those levels so that someone who's not ready for this is making sure that they come in at the right place. Does that make sense? Because I see it with language in movies too. When I see how many people take their kids to see Avengers and then blow right past the fact that it's PG-13, and as a parent you can make that decision, but they are telling you it's a PG-13 movie. So when you go there and there's language you don't like, because depending on who you are and how you raise your kids, there are lines in Guardians of the Galaxy that might bother you, but they told you it was a PG-13 movie. That's what they have to do. Then it's your job to take over from there. And I think it's the same thing with Sexy versus Sexualized, is realizing what audience you are making that comic for, because you want to make it as accessible as possible to get them in love with the medium so they stay with it forever.
Well, and I think that was one of the problems with Starfire.
Yeah.
Yes. You have this character that all these kids know. You know, they're like, oh, I want to grow up and be her. And then she comes out in the new book, you're like, oh, my God, it's a black girl.
And when they did Starfire in the 80s in the drug prevention comic, suddenly her costume got a lot more modest.
Well, who's going to a different audience
than
the regular comic usually
do. But when kids come to the comic store and want a Starfire comic, oh, I know her. And I'm like, no, you can't buy that.
So we've concluded that there is no answer, except the good judgment of the creative professionals. Okay. There's a lot to be said to the good judgment of creative professionals, and when you consider the thousands of pages that are produced relative to the smaller number of controversies, maybe that's serving us okay. But I'm starting to see some hands come up, people who want to enter the discussion, and we'll certainly have enough time for a bunch of you. And hopefully we'll have enough time for you guys to sort of argue among yourselves another round, at least in the process. Given that I can't see worth a damn, if you like stand up if you want to ask a question of the room, it probably is easier if I spot you. So we'll bounce around a little bit. Gentleman in the blue.
Thank you.
of interesting controls to try to deal with these issues. One of the challenges, if you've got a comic shop, is to some extent the covers are our trailers. And you've got a wall full of what might be considered to be PG-13 or even PG comics. Well, a lot of the comic shops have the real kiddie stuff, the G-rated stuff, sort of segregated at a comfortable height for the kids. But the PG-13 and the R and the covers tend to be on the same wall.
Well, yeah, and we have a kids section, which is awesome, but we also have, you know, the rest of the comics that come out. And if something's on, we do it in alphabetical order. So if something was like One Hit Wonder, it was a fine comic, but it's not for an 8-year-old. And if a kid goes over there and flips through it and sees a guy's face cut off on one page and sees, you know, breasts on the next page, this probably isn't a good, you know, thing for our store. So we have to be really adamant about bagging and boarding certain comics. So that's, it all comes to, you know, again, who is this for? Who is this audience for?
Well, kind of along the lines of what we were talking about Starfire, I mean, I was 12 and reading New Teen Titans, and all of a sudden in sixth grade, they handed me, you know, the giveaway of, and I'm like, this isn't Starfire, you know, but I was that little boy who was seeing what Starfire was supposed to look like, what Georgia drew her as, and then all of a sudden she has a different suit on, because, and I knew at that point, as that there was a difference, that they had to do this because they were giving it to kids, but I was still a kid buying it. And so now I have a 13-year-old, and so would I want him reading some Gal stuff? Some of it.
Some of it's not written.
Some of it's not for him. You know?
Exactly right.
Would I want him seeing Adam stuff? I mean, I love Adam. But as a parent now that I'm in a situation where I look at certain things, I have to look at it in a different way. I want him to read comics. I want him to love the things that I love. But I have to, is he ready for it now?
Although I will say that my son snuck reading them.
Sure. Well,
he's grown up to be a pretty decent human being, so it didn't hurt him too bad.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean,
there's part of me that wonders, and I say this not having kids, so it's all science fiction to me. I have god kids, and I'm very protective of them, but I also realize there's a point where sometimes I worry that we become too protective on the edges. I mean, I grew up watching Three's Company at 8, and because it was syndicated, it was on at 7 o'clock, and you just watch it. There's no way I should have been watching that. They just would have talked. But that's the kind of thing where it may not have been right for me, but I don't think it damaged me. And I don't think my parents were necessarily aware of necessarily what I was watching or the specifics of the show. But as a kid, I think you also self-edit more than parents give you credit for.
Sure.
Yeah, I agree. And there is a thing where you're keeping something away. I let my daughter's 14 now. She reads all Gale stuff. And she's a very well-adjusted child.
She appears
is this
to be
on the scale of considering parent.
I am the hardest person on her. So, but she's very grown up. She's very mature. And I just don't like to hide things like that from my kids because I don't want them to. You know, she looks at Adam Hughes cover and she's like, in fact, she bought your Maleficent from Chicago. She's a huge fan of his, and I don't want her to say, oh, we can't look at that because of this. You know, I want her to know because she's going to be out there. And like I said, she watched that Hardee's commercial and said, we're not eating there anymore. I'm sure those women have never even eaten a Hardee's because they're this big around. You know, and I was like, well, that's probably true. She didn't like that. But she appreciates also, you know, tasteful things like the Bombshell covers. She loves them. I think they're gorgeous. And I think that's a really good description between sexy and sexualized, or the Bombshell covers. Those are very sexy, yet they're not sexualized. But they can be sexualized by other people.
There's just a big difference between, to me, something that is obviously there as just to be an object. There's nothing there except for a body part or a look in the eye like come and blank me or whatever, compared to a something like a Bombshell cover or most of Adam Hughes covers that I can think of off the top of my head. It's not the same thing at all. There's a story there. There's a character there. Whenever he's done covers for things I've written, he always emails me and says, what is this book about? What's the story about? What happens in it? What are the key moments? And then he goes back and decides, you know, on a cover. And that, there's a huge distinction between that and here's just something that's a compilation of body parts, and the gate, the camera angle is right, you know, close up on a body part. That sends a whole different message, and I'm not saying that necessarily that message is not appropriate in some circumstances, but when, as Marguerite said earlier, when 90-something percentage of it is that, then that's when it becomes an issue for me. But it's just like a world of difference between that, between just an object and a person. It's huge.
And it just occurs to me, I was going to say that, in a way, superhero comics have always been kind of sexualized. I mean, I think there's something about the depiction of the male figure, which is an idealized primary physical characteristic male figure. And I think that really, although it can be quite appropriate, it gets a bit boring and tedious after a while. I think it was when artists got a little bit more refined and had different builds of heroic characters rather than broad shoulders, small hips, powerful thighs, big biceps. And I think quite often it's kind of it's a lazy or kind of unenlightened way to draw, that, you know, to make a man look manly, you give him huge muscles. To make a woman look female and strong, you give her huge breasts and big wide hips. It's a kind of an unintentionality or a lack of subtlety, really, I think.
Well, we need to admit that there are diverse body shapes, mm-hmm. and reflect those. And, you know, a short, tiny, flat-chested body shape could be every bit as sexy as, you know, a larger, more busty, curvy body shape. I call comics to be tasteful. I'm sure everyone that's read a comic I've written knows that. So I like there to be some uncomfortableness. But again, I don't ever want someone to feel like, you know, this is just an object that I'm looking at and there's nothing behind this.
And there's only one way for it to be.
Exactly.
I think.
Okay, let's get a couple more.
We're talking about... You can go. I seem to have a question. Okay. You guys are talking about body parts and sort of the art and the style of art. Do you think that maybe sort of a commitment to realism in body type? I think a lot of the covers that people have issues with, thinking of Teen Titans one recently, the Minara cover, obviously, where
realism,
it goes...
like as in people who can't fly?
People who can't exist. Like their bones would be warped and they'd be broken and their spine would be twisted. Escher girls, yes. Do you think that's a, you know, does that tie, how does that tie into this discussion, I guess?
Bad art.
I think that's one of the reasons why there is this discussion. Is that, you know, sometimes I'll look at something and go, does she have internal organs? You know, that's one of my things. I don't expect people to draw, like, you know, like they just have to recast. There's a show on BBC called Broadchurch. It's a great show, and they're making it for American TV, even though it's already in English. But they have to recast it with beautiful people because that's what, you know, apparently we want. Which I don't understand that, because I didn't watch it to see beautiful people. I watched it to see a really good story and really good acting. And I think part of the problem is that something like that takes you so out. It could be the greatest story in the world, but then you see something like that, and it takes you out of it. I don't even remember where I was going with this now.
I'd like to point out that we English have an inner beauty.
I think you're beautiful.
Yeah. I just want... Sorry. No, go ahead.
Noelle Stevenson actually had something to this point just a few days ago, where she was talking about that if the criticism is mostly about the anatomical correctness of the figure instead of whether or not it's a sexist drawing, and it was essentially trying to find the point between those two, that people, you know, began criticizing sexist covers, and their major thing was that, oh, these aren't anatomically correct, and so that's the real issue with it. And she was like, no, that's not the issue. The issue is it's sexist. You could draw a completely anatomically correct cover, trace a Victoria's Secret model, or trace of a porn actress, and it's anatomically correct, and it's also sexist as hell, and that needs to be, you know, the focus of the discussion. You could have the anatomical discussion from an artistic perspective, but if you're coming at it from, you know, the cultural significance and the gender significance of it, then you need to be focused on the personality and how the figure is presented.
And it's not always artists that commit these things. Yeah. I have had instances where I was working with Ed Bennis, who draws really sexy figures, and I had written a description where I want Black Canary to have one leg pinning down his hand, and then I want the other leg to be, you know, up against his neck, pinning down his head, and they're spread apart. And when the art came back, he did exactly the description that I had. It did not look so appropriate for that. Yeah. And we do this sometimes editorially, so, you know, it happens, not just the artists. I want to make that perfectly clear here, that it's, you know, everybody involved and along the whole chain. Comics don't work in that it's one person's responsibility usually for what comes out in the end.
Let's try and get a handful more.
I wanted to refer back to earlier where I felt like the conversation got a little derailed into what's age appropriate. I don't think anybody's questioning age appropriateness, but is a highly sexualized female figure, which is not representative, which is objectified, which has no personhood, is that appropriate for people who are of age? Is that the sort of message that you want to send out? And, you know, your comment about idealized figures, men are idealized athletically. Women are not idealized athletically. If you do the male equivalent of a woman with huge breasts, you're going to have a man with a huge package, and that's not necessarily what you're seeing. So I'm not sure. I feel like you got back on track a little bit after that, but the point of whether it's age appropriate to have, nobody's saying that people should have the Mila Manara cover for 12-year-olds, but should it be out there for 42-year-olds either? Is that what you want to put out there as representative of this medium and of this particular genre? Because this isn't necessarily even an issue outside of superheroes. Just to the same extent.
I think there's a lot of photoshopping being done, even on covers and things that have outside of comics, mm-hmm. on models and actresses mm-hmm. that are already beautiful, and they still will take in the waist, increase the bust, like, yeah. the cheeks. I mean, it's a cultural thing. It really is. I mean, it's, you know, particularly an American cultural thing, I think, in a lot of ways, that we've been raised with it, we accept it. And it's only, you know, when enough people start talking about it and thinking about it and discussing it that a change comes about.
Well, here's another thing real quick, is that I've had an assignment in one of my classes where everybody in the class said, well, you know, women are sexualized. Women are sexualized in comics, men aren't. Which, you know, that's not really true, but women more so, because in the world, women are more. But I said, okay, it's not just in comics. Go out, find an ad. Don't look very hard. Just go and find a magazine ad that were with women in it. And every single one of them couldn't believe how sexualized all the ads were. But we're so used to seeing that. The thing is, we're so used to seeing that nobody even thinks that's really out of place. They're like, oh, just, you know, whatever. I argue with my son constantly about it because he doesn't see anything wrong with certain things. And then I have to explain to him that he's wrong. But that's the thing, is that, like you're saying, it's everywhere. They're photoshopped everywhere. So it's not just in the comics industry.
But we're here in the comics industry, yes, and we're trying to solve our problems.
Going back to context and character, that really piqued my interest because in terms of sexualization, do you agree that with more female writers coming into the comics industry, more female editors, that you can have strong, good characters in a sexual, sexy portrayal, like Wonder Woman, for example, being proud, strong, and yet beautiful and sexy at the same time, as opposed to someone like, say, Frank Miller and his portrayal of women? You can have more women who help remove the refrigerator syndrome that most women in comics seem to get.
I think the answer to that is that the more diverse readership we have, the more diverse creatorship we have, the more that takes care of itself. We have to sit down and admit that our audience is not this teeny percentage of the population that fits into one category. Thus, we need to write these comics for, you know, males age 12 to 30 who are straight and like all the same thing. You know, it's just, we have to admit that that's just not the way we should be going. there should be a lot of diversity, whether we're writing straight up sexy stuff or not. You know, my answer in the beginning with Secret Six was, well, I'm just going to put a lot of beefcake in, and we'll just kind of start evening so that we can see that is something that people will respond in a positive way to. And I thought it was hilarious.
Oh, great shirt. Yeah,
very purple.
Oh.
Okay. What are some of the challenges, moving away from art for just a second, what are some of the challenges in terms of writing male characters and female characters and how they approach sexuality?
Is there a difference?
It's just challenge. I think it's fun. It keeps me up at night.
But it's just writing character, surely. I don't see there's a male character or a female character.
I just feel like at this stage in the game, especially if you're creating something new, create something new that we haven't seen 100 zillion times already. That's my main thing, is if you're going to deal with something sexy, sexual, romantic storyline or whatever, let's do it something that we haven't seen before in an honest way that's interesting and compelling and, you know, three-dimensional.
And create good characters,
yes.
Because not all women think the same way. I don't know if that's a surprise, but, you know, they all don't think the same way. They all don't react to the same situations. They all don't want the same thing. So just writing good characters is what should happen.
Well, and that diversity, it makes it easier to write, and the more types, the more attitudes, the more personality they have, the easier it is to get them to the conflict. In Love and Capes, I had Amazonia, who wore something that looked like Princess Leia's outfit in Jedi, except more revealing, but she was the only one who wore that, and nobody thought it was normal. So there was always conflict when that character showed up. It wasn't all the superheroes look like this. It was her in particular that they were reacting to. So I was drawing a sexy character, but it was also furthering the script along and trying to make sure that the story that I wanted to tell was being told. And when I was working on the book, going back to the art, I actually templated all the female characters on people I knew, because I knew guys' clothes, we have shirts and pants, and the colors change, and there's not a lot of difference to it. But I knew what my cousin wore was different than what my next-door neighbor wore, and I had this character in Love and Capes dresses like this person, this character dresses like this person, and I did the research. I had tons of fashion sites bookmarked so that I made sure they were wearing practical, real clothes, because for the most part, most of the female characters in my book were not superheroes, but I wanted them to look like real people. They weren't all wearing the same outfits, they weren't wearing ridiculous outfits, and they all dressed differently because they had different personalities.
I have time for another couple of questions. Lady?
I was wondering, this is, I think, directed more towards the artists on the panel, but all of you, I guess, feel free to jump in. Kelly Sue DeConnick has her sexy lamp test for writing women in comics, and the short version is, if your female character can be replaced in your story with a sexy lamp, you have not really written a character, you've just written an object. Is there maybe a way to transmit that idea into art, since, I mean, the art is every bit as much of the storytelling as the writing is?
I mean, I'm not sure I quite understand that, but certainly I think there's a lazy way to draw characters, which is just to emphasise obvious characteristics. But I think the real art comes when you go for less obvious characteristics. And certainly, again, I have to refer to Watchmen. I deliberately drew different body types. They were all heroes, but some were sort of little round people, some were skinny people. They stood differently. And actually, when you get into that kind of thing, to explore the nuances of character rather than the primary identifying things, everything becomes more interesting. It's more challenging to do convincingly, but I think it then becomes much more art rather than just servicing a perceived desire.
I'd add to that, as a writer, part of your responsibility as a writer in creating characters is you should be creating characters that can't be substituted for each other. And you're asking the artist in each case to build on what you give them. So perhaps you're giving them suggestions about the type of body language, the way the characters move. It's a very imperfect communication in a collaboration. If I ask Dave to draw someone who moves athletically, and I'm kind of relying on telepathy between the two of us to understand the word athletically in body motion as the same thing. But if I've given him different cues for the three or four different characters that may be in that scene, I've at least given him a starting point of what I have in mind, and then that gives him the opportunity as an artist to envision that with his unique talent. And when it's a wonderful medium, it's 1 and 1 equals 3, and the combination. Nobody should be substitutable for anybody else. Sadly, in my own work as well as in other people's work, frequently we don't achieve that level of success. But the goal should be that everyone should be as unique as everyone in this room is.
This question for anybody, but especially for Gail, since you're writing Red Sonja, who's a typical male gaze character, but obviously, at least the way you've written it and the way it's been drawn, it's a little not as out there as some of the older versions seem. Is there a way that you can take a character that's sexy and make sure it meets both male and female gaze?
Well, I think Red Sonja is a great example of that, and there was just a few things that I felt for me to be writing that character and to kind of update her and stuff, because I love the whole barbarian genre. I stick him in almost all the comics that I've written in one way or another, so to write just a straight-up pure barbarian is really exciting to me just because it's raw and dirty and drunken and all of those things, and sexy. But there were a couple things that I knew had to go right away. One was the rape origin. That just was not going to fly at all. And the other is, if you take a look at, like, Jenny Frizzin's covers, all the talented ladies that have done the covers for Red Sonja, and Walter on the interiors, you will not find a splayed leg, sword in the middle, you know, type of penthouse pose that she's been known for, because that, to me, is not who her character is. Red Sonja is a barbarian, and, you know, she will cut your head off if she doesn't like something that you say. She's not going to be going around doing these penthouse poses right before she chops your head off in the middle of the battle. It makes no sense, that type of stuff. However, the chainmail bikini is part of her trademark, and to me, I wrote her so that she's much more uncomfortable in a formal dress than she is in her chainmail bikini. And, you know, my attitude is that people say it's not that practical for battle, but she's so good that no one's going to get close enough. And also, she wears many other things in the story than just the chainmail bikini. But to me, that is a perfect example of something. She's a three-dimensional character. She has her own life, her own motivations, her own reasons she's doing things, and her own adventures. And the chainmail bikini is just a very small part of who she is.
Okay, I think we can manage maybe one more.
I was going off of a perspective of how I see sex. I see sex as a power, but it's one of the least impressive powers you can have in a human being to evaluate something with. I guess my question was, in the industry, do you see it like, you guys are creators for different stories, more aspects, not just the sexual aspect. Do you find that in your industry it's seen as super powerful? Like, do you think the sex is over-encompassing other things that should be talked about more?